Hi, I'm Ben McAdams. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center. I'm joined by Dan McKay on the right.
Hey, Ben. Welcome back to the show.
And Shireen Gourbani on the left.
Hello. We're so excited to have you back, Ben. It's really fun.
It's great to be back with you both. So let's go ahead and jump right in. We've had some pretty big election news this year, both on the national level and the local level. The whole nation was watching a few different races, starting with the Virginia governor's race. Tell me your thoughts on that. Why don't we start with you, Dan?
You know, this race, everybody saw it as being pretty safely Democratic, you know, earlier in the year. And then, you know, as got closer and closer to election, you saw McAuliffe start to slip in the Virginia governor's race. And then, you know, up to about, 2 weeks ago, the polls for the first time said like it was a dead heat, right? A split deal. And this is a seat that has been held by the Democrats for, is it 10 years? Maybe 12? I can't remember. So you're talking about, you know, the Virginians have elected a Democratic governor for this long. And then, you know, it was a dead heat a few days ago, and to lose by almost, you know, 5 points, you know, 55 to 45. That's a pretty big striking loss in a non-election year right after President Biden and the Democrats basically swept the national elections in a lot of ways. And so I think you have a lot of people scratching their heads saying, what does this mean? Right. And for me, I just look at it and say, I think what I'm figured out or what I'm learning, there were a lot of people who may have liked President Trump's or maybe his policies, so to speak, but just didn't like him. Right. And maybe that's why he lost the election. He'll never accept that. But maybe that's what it was. And now you see kind of the nation kind of pulling back on the cord. And this happens, though, to every single president. They always walk in with this feeling of a mandate. And then within that first 2 years, it flips the switch. It happened to George W. It happened to Barack Obama. And it's happened to Trump. And now it is about to happen to President Biden, I think, next year.
Shireen, what do you take away from the race?
So it's early, so we don't really have a big picture of what's happening. But my understanding is that this is a race that typically has low voter turnout, which is something we saw here in our local election, stunningly low turnout, and also a very motivated Republican base. So the Republicans came out to vote. Women, who I think, Dan, you might be right about this, were not the biggest fans of Trump. Republican women moved back in Virginia, it sounds like. So that's a place where white suburban women came back for this individual, even though I think there are a lot of undertones that suggest that this is not a person who's very moderate. He's quite conservative. And I'm really worried about kind of what this looks like going forward, because I'd love to hear your thoughts, Ben. If we don't have Trump on the ballot, or we do, what's better for thinking about kind of galvanizing the conversation or getting Democrats or progressives involved in voting? It just seems like people just dropped off.
You know, I don't know if you saw, the Deseret News had an editorial that talked about what the signal from this election is the rejection of extremism on the far right and the far left. And I don't know that I entirely buy into that, but there seems to be a message here that the Democrats nationally, and it's expressed in the Virginia election, but also in elections, I think, across the country, that the message is not resonating. And, President Biden got back from his foreign trip to Glasgow today, just recently, and said that this is not a repudiation of the Democratic message, but it means that Democrats have to come together and move forward on the Build Back Better plan. I think that certainly it's easy as me as a Democrat to be critical of the Democrats, but I think part of it might be true that this isn't a repudiation of the Democratic message, because I don't think there has been a Democratic message over the last 6 months that's been something to coalesce around. But I also think there's some truth to a rejection of some of the extremism in both parties. You know, we've had some loud voices on the Democratic side with messages that are alienating to a lot of middle America. And you saw the same with, I think, repudiation of Trump.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think we're missing an opportunity to really tell the story of Build Back Better. What is in the plan? What's going on there?
Go ahead, Dan.
Build Back Better is such an interesting component, right? Here you see the president, you know, loses the Virginia race. And then let's not lose the fact that in New Jersey, you know, you have a solid Democrat governorship, right? And that seat has been held by governor for a while. And now you have the incumbent Democratic governor hang on to it, I think it's by less than 30,000 votes. And so it's like, you know, 0.4% that he wins that seat. And it's so interesting, though, I have seen every president do this, right? Where they think, oh, the problem isn't our policies or what we've done, right? The problem is something else. And they like to try and find and blame it on something else. I will tell you that if the president does not get the message that it might be about his policies, right? The vaccine mandate is not popular, right? And it is not going well in middle America, period. You take that with, you know, the firefighters and the policemen and the teachers and everybody else who are ready to walk out over this, that's not popular, one. And that's a policy. Two, the other part of this too, is they're talking about, you know, we need the Build Back Better plan. That's really going to solve all our problems. But really what I see is, you know, it's the problem with what the Democratic agenda, and it's actually what the end of Jimmy Carter's, President Carter's administration was. He walked in and said, you know what, we've got a real problem with inflation and jobs, and what we need to do is we need massive stimulus into the economy. And what that did was it doubled down on the inflation and it blew it up. And that's what left Jimmy Carter with a one-term presidency. And now you see President Biden coming back and saying, we need to dump trillions into the market, which will then cause more inflation. I'm telling you, if the Build Back Better plan comes back, basically it's the buy more votes package is what they think it is. But if it comes back the way they're talking about with $3+ trillion, it is going to be the end of the Biden presidency. I'm calling it right now.
I'm just going to get on my soapbox and say, on substance, I think there's a lot of good things in the Build Back Better plan, but I've been really critical of the Democrats over the last few months because it's only been within the last, I'd say, week that it's been called the Build Back Better plan. Before that, so President Trump had his controversial tax cut for the rich, right? And it was called the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Who's going to oppose tax cuts? On the surface, everybody loves tax cuts and everybody loves jobs. What have the Democrats called their signature proposal that's been called for the last 6 months? It's been called the $3.5 trillion spending package. That's the best name we could come up with to market our plan to the American people. I think it's a failure of communications at the beginning.
Yeah, so I think that's true. And I also just have to say, you know, I understand, Dan, that you would take the position that the Build Back Better plan is not a good plan for the country. But when we're talking about significantly reducing for the first time in a very long time programs that reduce childhood poverty, when we're looking at pre-K, when we're looking at programs that actually help families get their kids educated, that invest in really the treasure that we have, our people in this country, I'm incredibly proud of what's in this package. And thinking about, you know, the dollars that are coming into our state at a critical time around housing, affordable housing investments, infrastructure investments. You know as well as I do that the people in your neck of the woods certainly would like to see better roads. They'd like to see them built faster. All of that is on the table right now with the Biden agenda. But you're absolutely right, Ben. The way that this has been talked about has had very little to do with the substance of what Democrats are putting forward to actually invest in American families. And that is what's on the table. So I can understand the partisan take, but I have to say I'm incredibly proud that we've prioritized families and working people in this package.
I want to make sure we have time for some of the local elections, okay, which was also a big one in this week. And, you know, I have to say, I think the biggest winner in the elections this week was ranked choice voting. It was so great to see that work so well. You saw candidates. Really, I think it held up. Candidates were winning with a 50% majority. And you saw really coalition building rather than divisiveness in the election. But thoughts on the local elections, Dan?
I was, you know, interested to see how we could have a ranked choice election, have the machine spit out results, and would we have election night results? My biggest fear about ranked choice voting in Utah was, could it work? And could the machine do the processing it needed to do it? And surprisingly, the election night results were there. The animations of where each vote went, like afterwards, I thought it was cool. You know, there's still, you know, down in my side of the valley, people are still questioning whether or not it was a good idea, whether or not it's the right thing. I'm hopeful that the results, when people see how it works, that it will be actually a value add for all of our municipal races. And I think that's, by the way, where ranked choice voting is stuck, is I don't see it moving past municipal elections at this point. But I do. I agree with you, Ben. Well done.
Shireen.
Loved it. I'm excited about it. I would love to see it move statewide. I don't know if there's an appetite for that, but I think I would love to see it expanded to other races.
You know, I think the other winner in these races, in addition to ranked choice voting, was just the quality of candidates. I've watched a lot of races, had a lot of personal friends. I have to admit I had some heartbreaks in the election results, and I had some things that I was really happy about. But the quality of candidates was really, really good across the board.
And we've just got some races that are right down to the wire still. So election results are still coming out. I'm guessing by the time if people are listening on Sunday, there'll be a little bit more clarity. But keep an eye. We've got some really close races.
And, you know, the one thing that isn't necessarily, you know, isn't talked about yet, but in every place where a woman challenged a man for the mayor's seat, right, that women were extremely successful in those mayoral elections. And I think that's pretty cool. You know, and I look down, there's a bunch of places where you see it, where, you know, where you have a lot of women stepping into larger perspective political roles. And I think it's all good. And our municipal races and our municipal elections, this is, in some ways, it's going to be the year of the woman. I think when all this is said and done, our municipal races are going to see a lot of rising by some of our female candidates. It's going to be awesome.
Well, again, I think a win for democracy, a win for so many candidates, and congratulations to all the candidates who worked so hard, put their heart and soul into these races, and some who came up short and some who prevailed. But, you know, it really was a win. And my heart and gratitude goes out to those people who put it all on the line. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Ben McAdams. I'm here with Shireen Gourbani and Dan McKay. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
And I'm Ben McAdams in the political middle. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. So let's talk about, there have been some changes in our state legislature. We saw a couple of resignations recently with Representative Christy Anson and Representative Frances Gibson. I have to say, I didn't know Representative Christy Anson very well because I had gone on to Congress but around the time that he was elected, but I did know Frances Gibson really well. Really enjoyed working with Frances. We didn't always agree. Sometimes we got in some political scuffles, but he was somebody who I think was motivated sincerely by public service and trying to do a good job, and I would think he will be missed. But thoughts about that?
I would love to hear Dan's take on what's going on. People are dropping like flies.
You know, every once in a while you hear people say, we need term limits in the Utah legislature. And I totally understand like that desire. But when you realize that the average life of a House member is like 6 years and the average life of a senator is like 8 point something, right? There's a lot of turnover in the Utah House of Representatives. I was looking at it the other day after Frances, you know, stepped away. If I was still in the House, I would be like the 14th or 15th most senior person in the House, having, you know, 9 years under my belt. And so it's really interesting when you look at how much turnover goes on. The legislature, especially over the last 2 years, has not been one for wilting violets. Like, it is a full contact, and it comes from all sides, like inside the chamber, and honestly, the pressure from outside the chamber. The COVID, you know, stuff has not been easy to navigate. A lot of people didn't think that was something that they were going to be involved in when they got elected. Ask all the states, all the school board members, right? Throughout the districts. All of them are like, boy, this is totally different than what I signed up for. That said, it is meant to be a job that is held for a short period of time and people move on. And it's just kind of the natural course of stuff.
So I'm curious, though, that in the recent reporting, it sounds like two previous representatives are looking to get back in. So talk a little bit about the mood. Like, what's the gossip? What's happening?
Well, look, I'd actually be interested to hear Ben's thoughts on this, too. So, Ben, don't hide, because Ben has been in the Utah State Senate and in the U.S. Congress, and he's left, right? And so I pray that when it's time for me to leave, that one, I will know it, right? Because a lot of my colleagues, when it's time for them to leave, they don't know. Okay. And two, once you're gone, I hope that you get to a point where you're okay not being part of the fray. I hope. But seeing like two former House members wanting to jump back in that had gone back to living a constructive life makes me really worried for the mental health of people that get involved in running for office.
Well, I think, you know, speaking for myself, I love public service, and it is so gratifying to be in a position where you see challenges, you see struggles that people are dealing with, and to be in a position to get in and move the needle and to see people's lives better because you're involved, because you're able to build a coalition and bring people around to garner support for an initiative. Some of the work that I'm most proud of is the work that I did at the county relating to addiction and recovery and helping people to get access to treatment. And today, many of those people who were in the throes of addiction and got treatment because I was able to work with Greg Hughes and Spencer Cox and the legislature and the county council, and we came together around a plan that got bipartisan support. People got into treatment, they turned their lives around. And, you know, I had a couple of them over to my house last week. These are personal friends of mine now. And so public service has its own reward. And so I, you know, now that I'm not in public service, I have to say, private sector service also has its own reward, and it is nice. I've really enjoyed going to my kids' sporting events and having some free time, and, you know, even picking up a TV show or two to watch and having some just a little bit more of a sane and less toxic life has been nice. But public service has its reward, and so I can certainly empathize with people who want to get back involved.
But Ben, now that you've left, are there people who are constantly asking you like what your political plans are, and how do you answer those? Like, and like what happens?
Well, funny you should ask, because I do get that question a lot. In fact, one of the things that always happens, an election year just takes everything out of you. You just are every second of every day focused on that election, especially a race like Congress. So what happens usually after the election is I have to get caught up on a whole bunch of personal things. So the year 2021 has been the time where I do medical checkups, go to the dermatologist, go to the dentist. So this year I turned 46, I'm of the age that it's recommended to get a colonoscopy. I had a prostate exam and I had a dermatologist exam where I'm sitting on the exam table naked as the various doctors at different appointments ask me about my political future. And nothing is more awkward than to talk about your politics and your plans and your life plans and your political future as somebody's preparing to do a colonoscopy.
So I'll just jump in here to say this is a great reminder of two things. Number one, it's open enrollment. So if you are looking to get access to healthcare, now is the time. Take Care of Utah can help you. You can go to healthcare.gov as well and get into a plan all the way until January 15th. So this is an extended period. But this is actually a really serious issue. There have been a number of people throughout COVID that have deferred really important regular checkups, a number of people who've skipped breast cancer screening, and we just had Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and I really appreciate you sharing that. It's deeply awkward to have somebody ask you about your political future in that state, but I do think that it's an important reminder to individuals to really, the more that we can kind of remind people, share the stories, get people out there doing their regular screenings, you know, that saves lives. So I just want to give a plug for that.
This public health announcement by Shireen Gourbani is brought to you by the letter L and the number 6.
Excellent recovery, Shireen. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Changing topics slightly, but some other big news this week was relating to the Independent Redistricting Commission. They delivered their proposed maps to the legislative committee earlier this week. They had 16 public hearings, hundreds of hours of map drawings. The commission ultimately settled on a 12 map proposals, so 3 maps for Congress, 3 maps for the state Senate, 3 for the state House, and then 3 for the state school board. In the mix were thousands of public comments. So I want to first, I guess, recognize those commissioners, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, who gave up so much time. I was on the Legislative Redistricting Committee 10 years ago, and it is a lot of time, and it is a thankless job. So I want to thank them for doing really hero's work of working to draw boundaries, independent of political influence, soliciting public input, and then coming up with a proposal that that incorporated all of that input. So really stellar work. Great work and great job instilling credibility in this new independent redistricting committee that the state of Utah created.
So I got to ask, how were these received, Dan? Like, what's the reaction been on Capitol Hill?
You know, it's clear that the commission put a lot of thought into, you know, these plans. And I think, you know, they're being reviewed carefully, trying to figure out, okay, what can we learn from these and what really are the messages? And that's always the interesting part to try and balance. And I think, you know, there's some strides that were made towards trying to make elections, you know, more inclusive, more fair in certain areas. There are certain parts that they, you know, missed out on. We kind of talked about last week, but, you know, kind of like Ben said, my hat's off. Cause as I have been up at the Capitol drawing maps, it is not easy. You know, every way you squeeze the balloon, it kind of comes out in different directions. So my hat's off for taking the effort.
Really, and I think at the heart of it is something that I believe in deeply, and that is that we have members of the public and disinterested parties. Some of them are Republicans, some are Democrats, but none of them are running for office. Disinterested parties listening to the public and drawing boundaries that seek to keep communities of interest together, keep cities and counties together, not dividing them up to try and force an outcome in an election, but really drawing something that's reflective of the public will. And I think that is such a better approach than having politicians draw boundaries, really politicians picking which voters they want instead of voters picking which politicians they want to have represent them. So incredible process. It'll be interesting to see where it goes with the state legislature. Dan, why don't you describe to us what the process is from here going to the legislature? You're in special session next week, I believe.
Yep. So next week we'll get together. There are a lot of map drawings still going on. I think we're taking and incorporating some of the efforts that were made by the Independent Redistricting Commission, and at the same time trying to figure out, you know, how do we make these maps work and make it so that it's, you know, a process that everybody can kind of follow along with and appreciate. And I'm excited, honestly, though, that it'll be done. You know, yeah. In 2 weeks from now, it'll be done. It'll be, you know, right. The battle lines, I guess, will be drawn and we can move on and figure out, okay, now how are we going to substantively deal with the policy that's needed for the state?
I did notice that Francis Gibson's resignation is effective the day before the special session. And if there were ever a time to not be in the legislature, it is during this redistricting special session. So kudos to Francis. Well played. Shireen, do you have a crystal ball? Any predictions on what's going to happen with the redistricting?
I would just encourage people to, you know, really look at the maps that were proposed. There's been excellent local reporting on it, so you can pull up those stories in the Deseret News and in the Salt Lake Tribune. If you're so moved, I think you should contact your representatives and encourage them. If you think they are fair maps, if you think they look like maps that should be seriously considered, send those emails. You know, far too often people just kind of let these things go by. This is a once in a decade event, and it is the time to have your voice heard. So I would encourage people to get involved, to contact their representatives and let them know that they believe that these fair maps that allow, as you said, individuals to be able to, you know, pick the people who represent them and not the other way around. That's critically important to a healthy democracy. And I hope people get involved.
So changing the topic slightly, but there was an interesting poll in the Deseret News, some great reporting on the upcoming U.S. Senate race in 2022. Senator Mike Lee will be up for re-election. And this poll said, you know, the headline was, can a Republican challenger catch Senator Mike Lee in 2022? Senator Lee is being challenged by two candidates in the Republican primary, also by independent Evan McMullen. So this poll gave an early peek. And so let me just read some of the results here. It said, if the election were held today, 53% of voters would choose Lee, 7% would choose Edwards, and 2% Isom. And then another 6% would go for some other Republican, while 32% don't know. So I think on the surface, you know, those aren't necessarily great numbers for some of the Republican challengers, but I've run competitive elections. I've looked at a lot of polls, and I think this is a red alert for Senator Lee. You know, this far out, a poll like this isn't really seen as a head-to-head. It's more of a test of name ID. And no surprise, both Ali Isom and Becky Edwards don't have high name ID on a statewide level at this point. But the fact that 32% of voters don't know that who they're going to vote for, if you look at the anti-Mike Lee vote, the 32% who don't know, and you add in the other support for the challengers, you're at 41% of Republican primary voters looking for somebody else, with 53% supporting Senator Lee. If I were the incumbent, I'd be worried at polls like that. And then you get to the Evan McMullen numbers, which I think are also pretty interesting numbers. So it's going to, I'd say, fasten our seatbelts. It's going to be a really interesting and competitive Senate race in 2022. Shireen?
I think this is going to be a race to watch. And I know that Dan's probably not going to think so, but I feel like we're in for some exciting times in the Senate race. Dan?
When you see 53% for an incumbent, like, and they've decided they're voting for an incumbent, this race is already over. We can talk about it all we want, but this race is over.
Well, I, as somebody who is not in the race and going to be observing from the sidelines, I think it'll be an interesting race to watch. And I think there's a lot of track ahead to watch. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Ben McAdams. I've been joined by Shireen Gourbani and Dan McKay. Thank you to our producer, Anthony Scoma. Thank you for listening.